Hello. Welcome to Blacter. Join me as I examine the best of black artists in my quest to becoming one myself. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Blacter. I am your host, Gabe Moses. Today's episode is a little different. For the first time, I will not be examining someone who is solely an actor, singer, or writer, but rather someone who is a creator, filmmaker, director, producer, and screenwriter, Miss Ava DuVernay. Throughout this episode, I'll be looking mostly at her work as a director over the last 10 years. But before we jump in, let's look at where she began. Ava Marie DuVernay was born on August 24th, 1972, in Long Beach, California. She was raised in Linwood, California by her mother and stepfather, but her aunt Denise had the biggest impact on her life. DuVernay admired her aunt's ambitions as she worked as a nurse overnight and pursued theater and literature during the day. Her aunt introduced her to classic movies such as West Side Story. DuVernay learned early on that art could do more than just entertain, but educate the world on real people and places and their story. Her mother, Darlene, was an educator and also taught DuVernay to speak through the arts. While living near Compton growing up, she also spent summers in Alabama, where her father's family lived. She would visit the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma, where her father remembers seeing Dr. King march in 1965. Of course, these experiences would later influence DuVernay to direct a hit feature film, but we'll get there. She graduated from St. Joseph High School in 1990 and went on to attend the University of California, Los Angeles. She double majored in English Literature and African American Studies. During her college years, she also became interested in producing for broadcast journalism. After graduating, she interned for CBS News during the O.J. Simpson trial. She didn't find her jobs exciting enough, so she decided to move on to the publicity side of things. She was hired as a junior publicist at a small studio. From this, DuVernay was able to work her way up to starting her own public relations company. The DuVernay Agency began in 1999. The company also campaigned for movies and television shows. DuVernay would get to witness directors like Clint Eastwood and Steven Spielberg. It wasn't until 2004, when she was on the set of Collateral, starring Jamie Foxx and Tom Cruise, when DuVernay was inspired to make her own films. She instantly began writing scripts. In 2006, she had finished her first short film that she wrote and directed, called Saturday Night Life. The next year, she would work on her first documentary called Compton in C Minor. In 2008, DuVernay would earn more recognition with a documentary called This Is the Life, in which she wrote, directed, and produced. The film was about the rise of hip-hop in Los Angeles during the 1990s. The documentary won several awards and was screened at a number of black film festivals. After success with documentaries and short films, DuVernay went on to write and direct her first independent film. I Will Follow, released in September of 2010 and won Best Screenplay at the African American Film Critics Association in 2011. The film follows a black woman who learns to move on after the death of her aunt. This was the jumpstart in DuVernay's career as a filmmaker, but there was much more to come. Her next independent film was called Middle of Nowhere and premiered in 2012 at the Sundance Film Festival. At the festival, DuVernay won the award for Best Director. The movie starred actors David Oyelowo and Omari Hardwick. The film centers around a nurse who had to cope with her husband's 8-year prison sentence. DuVernay's first two films were based on the events that took place in her mother and aunt's lives. She was writing and directing what she knew. In 2013, she would make two more short films on the side and direct an episode on the hit show Scandal, starring Kerry Washington. 2014 would be a big year for DuVernay. On Christmas Day, the major motion picture Selma came out in theaters. The film was directed by DuVernay and centers around the 1965 voting rights march, starting in Selma and making its way to Montgomery, Alabama. This was the first feature film that put Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. as the protagonist. The film included an all-star cast with actors David Oyelowo as Dr. King and Carmen Ejogo as Coretta Scott King. The film also featured Common, Andre Holland, Tessa Thompson, Cuba Gooding Jr., Wendell Pierce, Lakeith Stanfield, Tom Wilkinson, Niecy Nash, and Oprah Winfrey, and the list goes on. The film received high praises and criticism from many. Before its release, the film was already nominated for 4 Golden Globe Awards, including Best Actor, Best Original Song, Best Motion Picture Drama, and Best Director. Ava DuVernay was the first black woman to be nominated for Best Director. Although she did not win, she is paving the way for black directors, both men and women. Common and John Legend won a Golden Globe for their song Glory, which was a major hit and an anthem for the film. DuVernay also made history at the Oscars later that year by being the first black woman to direct a film nominated for Best Picture. However, the film did not win. Rather, they won Best Original Song again for Glory. Next, I'll be sharing with you an audio clip where DuVernay discusses her role as a black woman in the film industry. Enjoy.
I think I'm not the first. I'm not the first woman capable of directing a $100 million picture. I'm not the first black woman who's made something so beautiful that whatever body that's awarding it should have been awarding it. It's just the time. It's just the time, and I happen to be here. So I grew up in a matriarchy. The women ruled my family. My Aunt Denise, a huge fan of art, and so took her nieces, especially me, to see plays, you know, to take us outside of Compton and Linwood and Long Beach, where you're not even seeing films because there's no movie theater in Compton to even see a film. She was a big architect of kind of who I am in the exposure that she made sure I had to art. Film is a patriarchal system that's built by men for men, predominantly for white men. That's the history of the medium in the United States. There's a lot of talk about shattering the ceiling, and certainly I sit here privileged, right, after decades of women who have done it. But in general, I think a lot less about breaking down his door or shattering his ceiling, and more about building my own house. It comes down to who gets to tell the story. If the dominant images that we have seen throughout our lifetimes, our mother's lifetimes, our grandmother's lifetimes, have been dominated by one kind of person, and we take that, we internalize it, we drink it in as true, as fact, it's tragic, because it goes beyond just the film industry. You know, these are the images of ourselves that we consume. It affects the way we see ourselves and the way that other people see us. I feel like we have been lured into a sense of complacency, the land of the free, you know, equality for all those things that we say, but we don't really do. It's a really dynamic time we're in. You know, I feel really energized and electrified by the time that we're in. These times will be studied. So the question is, what did you do? What did you do during this time?
We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to the episode. After the success of Selma, DuVernay would continue to use her voice and visions to make powerful art. Her next hit would be a Netflix original documentary film called 13th, which was released in 2016. The film looks at the racial inequalities that exist in the prison system in the United States. DuVernay directed this film while also interviewing many of its public figures, including Angela Davis, a political activist. The film was Oscar-nominated for Best Documentary Feature, but won the Primetime Emmy Award for Outstanding Documentary or Nonfiction Special in 2017. I highly suggest watching this film to educate yourself on racism and mass incarceration. I've seen it twice already, and I learned something new each time. DuVernay does a great job at highlighting the abolishment of slavery and how that led to punishing black men and women as convicted criminals. It's a must-watch. On a more lighter note, in 2017, DuVernay directed her first music video with Jay-Z and Beyoncé and their song, Family Feud. DuVernay wrote the script with Jay-Z that came before the song. The video featured black stars from both television and film. The video acts as an 8-minute short film that starts in the future during the year 2444 and jumps around time until ending in 2018. The futuristic portion of the video evolves around an adult Blue Ivy, two black presidents, and black women who rewrote the Constitution. In 2018, DuVernay was on to her next big project. She directed the film A Wrinkle in Time, which was a new approach to a genre she had never dealt with. The film was a fantasy, action, and adventure-driven Walt Disney motion picture. It starred Oprah Winfrey, Reese Witherspoon, Mindy Kaling, and Storm Reid. It follows a young girl on the search for her father with the help of three celestial astral beings. In May of 2019, DuVernay would release a Netflix original miniseries called When They See Us. DuVernay created, directed, produced, and co-wrote this four-part series. The series is about the Central Park Five, now known as the Exonerated Five, a true story about five young teenagers of color who were wrongfully accused and charged for raping and assaulting a white woman in Central Park. Talk about a series that hits home for men of color falsely accused and imprisoned for years. The show was an overnight success. By June, it was all anyone was talking about. I remember watching the show during a tech rehearsal for a musical. Any chance I could get, I was hooked. From DuVernay's beautiful direction to the captivating performances by the actors, the show is probably one of my favorite miniseries out there. It does a great job of showing the true events from the perspectives of the five boys and their families. The show featured well-known actors like Niecy Nash and Michael K. Williams. There were a ton of newcomers who had breakout roles, including Asante Black, Khalil Harris, Marquise Rodriguez, Ethan Harrisy, and of course, the phenomenal Jor-El Jerome. Jerome played Corey Wise as both a teenager and an adult. His performance stole the show for me. He was the first Afro-Latino to win a Primetime Emmy Award for acting. In 2019, Jerome won Outstanding Lead Actor in a Limited Series or Movie, making history. His performance is credited back to DuVernay and the world she recreated for him to shine. This series is yet another must-watch. I come back to it from time to time and never hesitate to get chills. DuVernay has created beautiful pieces of art that speak to the black experience in America. Her work is always intended to honor those who fought for our rights, and she does all of them justice. She is currently the producer and creator of Cherish the Day, a series on the Oprah Winfrey Network. I'm so excited to see all of her future films and documentaries. They are sure to be amazing. To end this episode, I'll be playing an audio clip from the Oprah Winfrey special called When They See Us Now. In this portion, DuVernay talks with Oprah about the process of putting together this series and her intentions in doing so. Please check out the work of this beautiful, talented black filmmaker. She is unstoppable. With that being said, please enjoy this interview with Ava DuVernay.
Essential viewing, was that the intention?
Yes, that was the intention. Hello, everyone. We're on a real Oprah Winfrey show, OMG. I can't even believe it. I'm just going to keep on going.
Just keep going.
But yes, no, the goal was to create something that stuck to your ribs and that wasn't junk food. It was to create something that was going to be a catalyst for conversation. Entertainment serves all kinds of different purposes. I love horror, I love romance, I love action. But to be able to create something with my collaborators that is actually going to move people to action, move people to evaluate what they think and how they behave in the world, was our goal. And so to hear something like that from Mr. Burton, Roots being such a seminal series, as something that really shifted the culture, was, you know, one of the best reviews we could get.
You know, I remember, for anyone who still doesn't know, the original title for the series was, the working title was at least Central Park Five. Mm-hmm. And I remember when there was some talk amongst the producers about whether or not we should keep that name or not keep that name, and you insisted that the name be changed. Why?
Central Park Five felt like something that had been put upon the real men by the press, by the prosecutors, by the police. It took away their faces, it took away their families, it took away their pulses and their beating hearts. It dehumanized them. They are Yusuf, Antron, Kevin, Raymond, and Corey. And those are their names, and we need to know them and say their names. And so it became really important to think about that at every level. As a director, my job is to look at everything, and the title was a big part of it. It's the first time you meet the movie is when it walks up to you and says, "Hi, my name is." And so we needed to be more than Central Park Five.
I know you're always, you know, all directors and producers are anxious when something's going to open, and even when it's on Netflix spread over 190 countries, there still is that, is anybody gonna watch? And then you wake up and it's trending. It's just trending.
Yeah.
What did you think?
I was stunned that whole day. You know, because with Netflix, it drops in 190 countries at the same time. So I'm getting tweets from the Netherlands, Brazil, Compton, you know, Iowa. It's all over the place. You hit that Twitter translation button, it's on IG, Instagram, it's Facebook. Everything was overloaded with the response. And I thought and I hoped that the piece would be respected. I really wanted the men's stories to be told and wanted them to be heard. But I didn't understand that it had the possibility to kind of shift the cultural conversation in the way that it's doing it now. That was kind of what you hope anything will do.
Yeah.
But this, on the day that it dropped in those 190 countries, it kind of exploded in a way that I think is a surprise maybe to...
Yeah, I was going to ask, were you
surprised? Was it a surprise for you?
I was surprised that it was trending, I can tell you that. Yeah.
Because I woke up...
Because I didn't think everybody was going to be watching, that many people would be watching at the same time.
Yes. Even in the United States, I woke up that morning at 6 a.m. and it was trending at like number 16, and I was like, wow, some people are... Oh gosh, this is great. And throughout the day, it just, as people woke up across the country, and I guess people don't work or they watch Netflix at work.
On the way to work.
On the way to work. There are people watching on subways, on their lunch breaks, but it just kept going up. And by the time it hit the evening and people got home from work on a Friday on the East Coast, it shot to number one and it stayed there all night and into the next day.
So. Yeah, I thought it was one of the best, most powerful uses of social media I've seen recently. So. You were surprised by the public. Have you been surprised by Linda Fairstein's response?
No, I wouldn't say I'm surprised by it.
Okay.
I think it's expected.
Linda Fairstein, you know, was a prosecutor in the Manhattan District Attorney's Office, and she led the sex crimes unit during this case. And it's, of course, been reported that she has stepped down from the board positions, some, and has also stepped down from charities, and has been reported that she's been dropped by her publisher. What do you have to say about that?
I think it's important that people be held accountable. And that accountability is happening in a way today that it did not happen for the real men 30 years ago. But I think that it would be a tragedy if this story and the telling of it came down to one woman being punished for what she did, because it's not about her. Nope. Really, really not all about her. She is a part of a system that's not broken. It was built to be this way.
Yep. Okay?
It was built this way. It was built to oppress. It was built to control. It was built to shape our culture in a specific way that kept some people here and some people here. It was built for profit. It was built for political gain and power. And it is incumbent upon us. It lives off of us, our taxpayer dollars, our votes, the goods that we buy that are made inside of prisons. It lives off of our ignorance, and we can no longer be ignorant. Mm-hmm. And so the goal of this okay, Linda Fairstein, okay, Elizabeth Lederer, okay, all of these people on this particular case who need to be held accountable. But the real thing that we are all trying to do, all of the artists who collaborated with me, she's asking the question, but she knows the answer. Because she wants me to do it, because she loves me. Go, Ava, that's what you're doing. Our real goal is to be able to say, go, America, let's do this, let's change this. And you can't change what you don't know, so we came together to show you what you may not know. Now that you know, what will you do? How will you change this? That's our goal.
Okay, good job.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode. You can follow me on Instagram at Gabe J. Moses. Be sure to follow and subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts to get updates on new episodes every Tuesday and Friday. Until next time, I'm Gabe Moses, and Black Artists Matter.